When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Welcome to episode 171 of the Unholy Trinity Podcast, brought to you in association with Sports Social, the UK's only dedicated sports podcast network, and also Fanatics. I don't know what to say, to be honest with you. So we'll talk cricket. We'll talk a bit of cricket to start things off. Delighted to say back on the show. I think for his hat-trick appearance, his cricketer, Nottinghamshire, the Welsh Fire as well, in the 100, travels around the world playing cricket. It's Jake Ball. Jake, besides Everton, how are you on this Sunday morning?
Not too bad. So, like you say, I think, Everton aside, not too bad. I managed to pick myself the winner of the National yesterday, so that cheered me up just after the full time whistle went. But it's good. Season's just started, so just getting back into the swing of things. Could do with the weather picking up a little bit, but other than that, it's all looking up.
Well, I say, didn't have the Grand National winner, that's for sure. Me and Pete listening on the radio on the way home with the delay, and we had same horse. I think he fell sort of halfway through. So it was a typical Everton day, wasn't it? Compounded by the Grand National as well. But obviously, like you said, you've been traveling around a little bit across to Dubai. The 100, when does the 100 kick off?
August starts pretty much all of August. I think it starts on the 3rd, finishes the last couple of days of August, so it's all of August that we're playing that one.
And you're back with the Welsh Fire again?
Yeah, I'm back with the Welsh Fire. I think we've had quite a big rebuilding. Yeah, I think obviously the last couple of years hasn't quite gone to plan. So got new coaching. We've got Mike Cussey, Mr. Cricket. Had a few conversations with him. Seems like he's ready and ready to go. I think we did have a really good draft. We've got a good couple of overseas coming in that we really needed. Kept hold of a few, but also I think you can look at every side in that and say they've got a good team. So I think it's about getting off to a good start and trying to keep the momentum going through the whole tournament.
Yeah, it's certainly, as the last sort of couple of years have gone, it seems to be picking up a little bit more sort of popularity as well. When they bring obviously changes into any sport, it always takes a little bit of time, doesn't it? But you look at 2020 now. I think when that first came in, 2020 is absolutely massive, of course, and obviously hopefully the 100 goes a similar way. So we look forward to, obviously, as you say, the weather improving and the cricket season really getting underway. But unfortunately, we're here to discuss in a bit more detail Everton. Obviously, a lot of us there yesterday, Everton 1, Fulham 3. I think, you know, we've had a little chat before we recorded, and for me, the worst performance under Sean Dyche by a country mile. A lot of things went wrong. We got a lot of things wrong as well. Well, Pete, I will come to you. We were both there yesterday in glorious sunshine. I think I got a bit of a tan, I've got to be honest. I had my coat off and everything. It was almost tropical in the corner of the paddock yesterday. And is it simple to say that was on Sean Dyche?
Probably. I mean, I think you can make a partial case for we were without some very important players. Obviously, you know, Coleman, Anana, Decore. You know, obviously, Calvert-Lewin's been an absentee for majority of the season. But I think you take those first three out of our team and we're a very, very different outfit. But for me, Dyche had lots of opportunities to make better decisions yesterday. I mean, it was clear from the off that the 4-4-2 just left us far too open. I think when we saw the team sheet, you know, we thought he made a similar structure to how we kind of finished up against United, where Iwobi would be more central, Gray would be on the right, and then Mope would be up top on his own. And I think most of the conversations going into the ground were, well, why hasn't he gone with Sims there? But then you see the lineup, and it's 4-4-2, and you know, Gray's up there with Mope. The ball was just repeatedly bypassing both of them. It was coming up on goal kicks, and we couldn't make it stick. I think I said to you, well, if Mope's up top, then, you know, surely that means on goal kicks that, you know, Pickford's going to look to kind of swing it out wide. And I think there were a few times where he would look for Godfrey to kind of win the header and, you know, make it stick and try and get us going. But I don't think we did that enough. I think when we did it, it wasn't effective. And then we just seemed to persist with going long. Couldn't make it stick. The ball kept coming back. And he thought, just change this up. And after we went a goal down and we're feeling a bit deflated, he did seem to change it and kind of go to the 4-5-1, which made us a little bit more competitive going in. But then, again, the Sims change was just screaming out to everybody watching that game. Now, and it should have been made at 50 minutes, or 55 minutes. And when he did make it, I mean, the game was gone. So, you know, you don't know what his thinking is there. And, you know, is Sims carrying a little bit of a knock? You know, that hasn't been reported. Who knows? There are other factors that have come into play that we don't know about. I mean, you can't assume, you can't speculate. But on face value, it just seems like he got it really, really wrong. And was far too slow to do anything about it. And let's just hope it's a lesson learned.
Well, exactly that. But there's many, many lessons to be learned, because most people that obviously I saw on social media when that team was announced, obviously me and yourself speaking in the ground, Pete, we were slightly baffled by the starting 11, by the setup. Especially given the fact that Fulham have got two centre halves who are absolutely massive. You know, Adebayo and Raheem are huge. So we can't play from the back, first of all. And we quite often will go long. Now, that's not a major issue if you've got a little bit of height there. Now, Onana not being fit, obviously unexpected. He was training this week. There was no concerns reported. So the thought would be, and as has happened, even when Demarai Gray plays the front on his own, Onana will push on and look to win any kind of long balls to bring players in. We didn't have his physical presence. So not having him meant that we, after sort of Tarkowski and Keane, there was just no height in the team. And we were still going long. We were still, I mean, Pickford was getting annoyed. Tarkowski was getting annoyed. There seemed to be a little squabbles here and there over the course of the game for me, with players looking to blame each other. But there just didn't seem to be any kind of answer. There was no kind of problem solving. You know, there was no kind of... it didn't result in Everton playing any kind of different way, particularly. We were still looking to go a long time. And again, obviously Sims comes on and it makes a little bit more sense. But it just lacked ideas. But having no Onana was a big thing. We know the Corey is a massive miss. That puzzle still hasn't been solved by the manager as well, because there's no one to replicate the Corey's energy, and especially in the press, as we discussed last week. But Lee, how concerned are you after looking at that yesterday, watching the game, seeing how much went wrong, how poor we were, and how little we had in the way of answers? How concerned does that make you feel going into the final seven games of the season?
Well, massively concerned, because you can basically say now the Dyche bounce is well and truly gone now, isn't it? You know, that's one win in the last eight games. You know, and at this stage of the season, that's everything, absolutely everything. You look at Bournemouth, who are right in the mess. Goal difference is worse than ours. Couldn't buy a win for love nor money. And they've played similar teams to us recently, and they've won three out of the last four. You know, they've beaten Leicester. They won against Spurs yesterday. You know, they beat Liverpool as well. And they've also beaten... Who else did they beat, Mike? I can't remember. But anyway, they've won three out of the last four, haven't they?
They beat Spurs, yes. They beat Liverpool. They're a side who, in January, they strengthened and they brought players in. And those are the players who are getting them across the line.
Well, that Uatara especially, we were linked with him. We were apparently late to the party. And he set up the goal against Liverpool, and then he scored the winner against Spurs yesterday. So there's 6 points there. So if that justifies the signing, that justifies the signing right there. But anyway, the point I was saying, Pete was bang on with some of those points there. I think Dyche has to take a lot of flack for me in this. I mean, I had a feeling he wouldn't start with Patterson. You know, it's always caution first. I think I said to you yesterday, and you guys will probably remember, I think it was Ancelotti who first played Godfrey at left back, wasn't it? And then obviously, you know, he had a bit of a run in the side. It seemed to work for a bit. And I do remember one game where he ended up playing right back. I can't remember which game it was. And then he had an absolute horror show at right back, Godfrey. And then he never, ever played there again. We've got a perfectly fit right back in Pat Patterson. Yes, he's coming back from injury. So, yeah, you know, maybe you won't get the full 90 minutes out of him. But what we know his strengths are is bombing forward, aggressive, you know, and basically taking the game to the opposition. So why on earth he wouldn't start with an actual right back yesterday who was on the bench is beyond me. Onana, yeah, massive miss, especially with Decore out. That upsets the balance in midfield we've had recently. And then the biggest thing for me, you've just said it there with Mopay and Sims, but the other one is, why is Calvert-Lewin not even on the bench? He's been training for 10 days, apparently. Let's be honest, if you look at the fixtures between yesterday and the end of the season, that's our most winnable game by a country mile. Fulham are on a bad set of runner results. They're missing their main man up front. They've got nothing to play for, so they've pretty much got the slippers on. And then he goes, well, yeah, we'll give him another week and he can come back against Palace. What? What is that even about? It just lists the crowd, it lists the players on the pitch because they know they've got, obviously, on his day, an international striker on the bench, clearly our best centre forward. You know, if you need a goal with half an hour to go, you can bring him on. Apparently, you know, from what we've heard, and Bobble said the same thing, it was, you know, it's something along the line to do with, oh, we didn't feel his sharpness was quite there. I mean, with 5% sharpness, Calvert-Lewin, he's still better than Neil Mopay, isn't he? Let's be honest. So for me, that was unforgivable. And then to play the way we did, we just set up in Fulham's hands right there, really. And you just looked at that side from the get-go and you just thought, oh, no, here we go. And I think, you know, sadly, I wasn't at the game, but it sort of deflates the crowd. It would have deflated you guys before you even go in, isn't it, into the ground, thinking, oh, no, we've got a guy up front here who scored one goal in the last 21 games. And, yeah, I don't want to pin it all on him because obviously there's other factors as well. But, you know, when we did change it up, finally, after 4-4-2, was it just an absolute diabolical performance in the first half an hour. Didn't work against United, like Pete said. Didn't work here. He changed it. We got a good goal. We're back in the game. We had our best spell in the game. And he has a one-on-one lap. We've all seen the stills this morning on social media. And I just can't get my head around that. I can't get my head how he hasn't just slotted that, side-footed that in the corner all day long. And he's tried to dink the keeper. And you just think, and even then he scuffed it into the keeper's, straight into the middle of the keeper's midriff. And you just think, what is going on here? I mean, that goal there, Mike, you said it off air then. If he scores that, the game then, it's not over, but, you know, we're certainly, you know, it lifts the crowd. We're in the ascendancy. Like I said, Fulham have got nothing to play for. It's a totally different feel to the game, isn't it?
Well, the first of the 25 minutes, obviously, we went behind as well. Everton just weren't at the races at all. And then we picked up. We obviously, for us to go 1-0 down and come back, lovely goal, by the way, Dwight McNeil. He does score a really decent goal, and, you know, it's a great finish. And you thought at that point, I thought, you know, let's kick on now. We've got a little bit of belief because we've been terrible. There's a little push start that we need. And Everton then, for the rest of the first half, were much the better side. And there was chances. I mean, it's on the Mopay chance for me. It's got to be because it was so clear cut. Listen, it was a good little bit of movement. It really was. It was a nice little bit of football on the edge of the box, a bit of an interchange. He gets played through. You could argue he hasn't got to take the first touch, but he does. Okay, no big deal. He's still got plenty of time. I just don't know what he's doing. If you're a striker who's banging form, you can dink it and you probably score because you'll connect correctly. If you're a striker who's not scored, like you were saying, Jay, I think it's about 21 matches, you know, since Neil Mopay scored against West Ham, then you just literally get your head down, concentrate, put it in the corner where there's loads of space, and you go in two one up. And I think at that point, a Fulham side devoid of confidence. I've heard this morning from somebody that apparently since the United game behind closed doors, not all is well at Fulham. There's been a few little off field issues. The players have been down. Step forward, Everton Football Club, to come and get 3 points and to pick yourselves back up again. You know, this is a side who have really struggled after, obviously, Mitrovic gets his game ban. Silva gets a couple of game touchline ban as well. They have been struggling for form. And if we go in 2-1 up there, for me, that's the game. We don't lose the game because they've got to be a bit more open. We've got something to protect. The fans are up because we're winning the game. And it's on that chance. And also, Demarai, you know, a great little ball in from the right-hand side. Gray flicks his foot at it. It goes about an inch or two wide of the post. You know, another good opportunity. But Everton were forcing things in the final sort of 15 minutes of the first half. But that's not good enough. Where were you for the first half hour of the first half? You've got to start with some kind of intent. And we started with none at all. And that's the big issue, you know. But Jake, obviously, you've seen it as much as we have, and you know we can't pin it all on Neil Mopay, because you know it's not all on him. Of course it's not, and we always look for a four guy. But I could name 11 four guys yesterday, because I thought they were all poor. You know, outside of maybe Garner Gay, who was average. Dwight McNeil, he was average. But the rest of them, you know, that's not a performance that you expect to see under a manager in the realms of Sean Dyche, who demands, as we always say, the minimum requirement is maximum effort. Yesterday, maximum effort was not on show, was it?
No, it isn't. I would like to put it all on Mopay, because I'm not his biggest fan. But I think it's all pretty much been said. But for me, like you say, I think as a squad and a team, you'd look at that game and go, this is our game to get 3 points. I don't know whether they talked it up too much, whether it was built up to be like, it is a big game. You can't hide from that. And with a few of the decisions that Dyche made, now is not the time to be cautious. If you've got somebody that's 50% fit or 40% fit, but could make a difference, you've got them on the bench, or, you know, you start somebody that you think, you know, is a slight risk. You just do that because, you know, like I say, now isn't the time to be taking the risks, and like you say, with Fulham, if we'd come out and hit them hard, maybe got an early goal, put them under some pressure, they could quite easily have cracked. But it just looked like a nervy performance. Didn't look like a normal Dyche performance for me. I think in previous games we've come out and started strong, started well. Yes, we haven't quite got the goals, but we've still attacked and looked dangerous. Whereas it just didn't look dangerous at all. Like say, the ball was going up to Mopay, it wasn't sticking. It's almost like he played the formation yesterday to try and fit Mopay in, and it just didn't work for me. I think going forward, I think I just need to just sort of break the shackles and just say, right, we're just going to go for it, because it's that time of season now. We've got to hit everyone hard, and if anybody's even 50% fit, get them out on the field if they're going to make a difference for me.
Jay, you've played obviously high level sport in cricket. Do you find if you're going into a game like that yesterday, where you're kind of expected to win, that the psychology of being, look, we're playing out of form Fulham side, everybody knows this is the must-win game, that must have a massive effect sometimes on players. Some players obviously rise to that, others probably maybe shirk it. Have you seen that yourself in your field? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you see it all the time. There's been a few times over the years where we've come up against teams that we'd beat probably 99 times out of 100. You just maybe take your foot off the gas a little bit or whatever. You know, these teams punish you. Like, so this is a Premier League. Like, there's class players in every single side. If you're not at 100% at the races, you're going to get caught out. You're going to get found out. And it felt like that a little bit to me yesterday in that first half an hour. Whereas I think we were just expecting to to win or them to sort of crumble. Having watched them for the last three or four games, like I say, since the Man United game, they've been terrible. So I think we just expected to sort of go and win that game. And I think they caught us off guard a little bit. So, yeah, I think it was a big factor.
I totally agree with you on the Calvert-Lewin point as well, because, like I said before, you know, even if he's in the squad, it lifts everyone, doesn't it? Not just lifts the crowd, it lifts the team. I think part of the reason, Mike, why you said you saw Tarkowski and Pickford arguing, I think part of that may have been Pickford probably being told to still go long, don't play out from the back. But then obviously, like, he knows that Mopey's losing every single header against, you know, two giants at the back, like you said. So maybe that's where the frustration was coming from as well. They almost kind of thought, well, we're basically doing something here that's clearly not working, but we've got to follow the orders here. You know what I mean? And maybe that's why those two were niggling at each other a little bit as well.
Possibly so. I mean, obviously, things weren't going our way. And every single time Pickford was going long, he was going long down the middle. And that was the thing. As the goalkeeper, who, you know, he's renowned for having a decent delivery, Pickford, and he can pick players out, you know, 50, 60 yards away. You've got to be clever. You know it's not working. And it's okay saying, you know, you've got to play to order. Okay, to a point. But you've also got to take responsibility as a player. You know, you've got to look at, well, that ain't working. So we can't just rely on picking up the second ball, because we weren't doing that either. So even if they were winning the first header, how often were Everton getting the ball after they won the header? They just weren't, because there was no challenge on the centre-half as such. If you've got Mopey, who's like, he's about 5 foot, and you've got Adegbayo, who's about 6'4", then he's winning the header comfortably, and he can just knock it down to a Fulham player. You know, we basically made, I mean, we know how good Willian is. We identified them last week as obviously the one to watch almost for Fulham, because a lot of their good play goes through him. But him, I said, didn't I, about a couple of Fulham players within the midfield who can do a little bit of damage, because they've got quality footballers. And Everton just made it far too easy for them. And that was the biggest concern, is no one wants to take responsibility to actually change things up and do something a little bit different. And Pickford was one of those players. You know, the fact that if you're going to play a long ball, then okay, be clever. Like you said before, Pete, go wide to Ben Godfrey, because at least he's semi-decent in the air, especially in a wide position against a winger, or, you know, a left or a right back. And we've got to be clever. But, you know, I said Harrison Reed, you know, I said he should be working in an estate agent with that kind of name, but he always plays well against Everton. And yesterday, I mean, obviously he got that first goal, but he was running the midfield between him and Willian, the two of them running the midfield, because we only had two in the middle, and Everton just can't play two in the middle, because we were 4-4-2. We were getting overran. And like I said earlier on, there was no physicality. If Onana's in there, if the Corey's in there, Everton don't lose that game yesterday. That's the big thing. And those two players, Seamus Coleman, a leader, missing, it's a massive thing. We haven't got the depth to be able to replace those kind of players. But that's no excuse for the tone that was set early on. And that was how poor the level of performance was. But the thing, but when you get back into the game, which we did, obviously we get back to 1-1. We end the first half well. We started the second half well, actually. You know, we Mikhailenko took a shot and such. He was in about 30 seconds of the second half starting, and has to do better. Wins a corner, but has to do better. His first touch was awful. And at that point, you think, yeah, you know, we're carrying on where we left off at the end of the first half. Sucker punch. Another poor goal. We go 2-1 down. A ball goes to the back post. Godfrey jumps, misses it, gets underneath the ball, really. Gets literally knocked back down. And Wilson comes in, slots it 2-1. And it was that point for me where, watch the players, heads go down. They think, we can't come back again. There's just no way. And that, for me, is unforgivable. Because even if you come away with the points, okay, not ideal, but it gives you something. And you think, okay, kicking the teeth there, we've been a better side for the last 20 minutes or so, but we didn't. And heads went down, there was no belief, the hearts went from the players. But again, at that point though, Pete, we go 2-1 down. I think was it the 52nd minute it was that they scored that goal? Change it. You've got to change it. You can't then keep the players that you've got on the pitch. You can't say, right, okay, we'll keep on going, see how we go with that. You've got to, at that particular point, bring on Ellis Sims, surely.
Definitely, I was going to say exactly that. I mean, it's the change the game was crying out for, and the irony is when Sims did come on, at least for a few minutes, he did give us a bit of a lift. We did look more competitive. The ball was sticking when it came up. And I think you highlighted something after the game yesterday, which I thought really epitomised it for me, where the ball had come over the top for Sims. He wins it, brings it down, runs at the defender, and ends up about halfway along the right-hand side of the 18-yard box, has to turn and come back on himself. And when he lifts his head up, there's not an Everton player within about 15 yards of him. And then he then has to try and keep hold of the ball and play it backwards.
I'd say more than 15 yards, Peter. I think there was an Everton player within 30 yards at the very least. I couldn't believe that it was a nice little ball down the side. He's used his body. He's got in. He's picked the ball up nicely. As he's turned back on himself, thinking, nice, I'll roll this ball back. I'll get into the box. He's looked around and gone, where are you, girl? And they were literally all in the halfway line, just sat down, putting the bet on from the Grand National as Ellis Sims is trying to make something happen. And in the end, he did quite well to get the ball across. I think after about sort of 10 seconds of allowing players to get up and around the area, he got the ball across and it went across to Iwobi. But that's shocking, isn't it? That is awful, that.
It is, and they still get an arse kicking for it because, there were 6 minutes of added time. And I don't think anyone on the pitch or in the stadium, believed that we could do anything with that. And that's terrible because, again, Fulham were really, really poor. Defensively, they were there for the taking. They absolutely were. And I know we can kind of lament over the Mopay chance. It's a really poor finish. He's made a really bad decision. That's any striker's bread and butter all day long. It should be in the back of the net. It's an easy finish. But as a squad, as a team, we were poor and we let ourselves down because, when we go 2-1 down, I think they scored on 52 minutes. We absolutely could have got back in that game. And, it's easy to say, isn't it? But you fully believe if we would have equalised, then we could have gone on and got more from the game because I don't think Fulham were up for it. They absolutely weren't. Throughout For the first portion of the first half, I thought we should have done more with how on top we were. Like you say, Mike, when we equalised, they were then really, really uncomfortable. Start of the second half, we were on top. But we can't let that psychological fragility start to creep back in. And it was like a throwback to the end of Lampard's tenure where, as soon as a team wins the ball, they can just run through our midfield. And you were sat there thinking, what am I watching? And it's then when you start to get worried, isn't it? It's all very well losing those games if, the referee has a stinker and decisions go against you. Or, I know we drew against Spurs, but like the Decore incident, someone loses the rag and gets a red card. And, these things can go against you and affect games. But when you're just terrible, like when you're just awful and the manager's made a baffling decision, that's when you get really, really worried, and it's no use looking at the relegation running and, what other teams will pick up. Because if we're playing like that, then we're doomed. And for me, he needs to drag them all in. He needs to get them all into training early, have an inquest, sit down, and why that can't happen again. And just, the players need to take responsibility for the way they responded when we went 2-1 down because... There was still 45 minutes of football left to play, but we couldn't do anything with it.
And that's where the belief and the heart comes in and the stomach for the fight. I've said in recent weeks, you look at that side and we were pulling games back and the Spurs game was a prime example. So the players were showing, listen, we will fight. I mean, we will leave it all out there. But it's all well and good doing it against a side like Spurs. But you can't do it against a side like Fulham where you should be picking up 3 points, in my opinion, then, hope is fading fast. And that was the first time yesterday where I sat there and thought, obviously we've been in trouble, but I thought, if this is the level of performance that we're putting up against an average Fulham side, we've got problems here. Especially when you see, obviously, the Bournemouth get a last minute or stoppage time winner against Spurs. Wolves have pulled themselves away. Palace have pulled themselves away. Obviously, at the time, Leicester hadn't played Man City. You expected them to lose the game. But by the way, Man City, me and Lee were speaking at the time, Jordan, when the game was on, took the foot off the gas, made a raft of changes, you know, Haaland off a half time. Was Stones, Rodri, De Bruyne, Grealish, they all get taken off and they bring on, obviously, loads of kids. And then City then, you know, take the foot off the gas. And Leicester had chance after chance. I think their XG in the end was better than Man City's. You know, so they've got a bit of quality in their side. They brought a new manager in with a handful of games left. So nothing stopping Leicester kicking on. So we are heavily, heavily in struggle at this moment in time. And you look at that third goalie, and at the time, I don't know what I'd done. But I just saw the ball going to the back of the net. I think I was looking at the bench. Maybe I was looking at the bench as some kind of salvation. So I think I was seeing if Ellis Sims was actually warming up, if he was going to come on at any point, and seeing what we could do. And then the ball is in the back of the net. And I've seen it back this morning. And a free kick from the sideline by the dugouts, lofted to Dan James. He took a touch inside, deflected off Tarkowski's backside or back into his path, and he slotted 3-1. That's a goalie which epitomised Everton's performance, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely shocking, mate. When I first saw it, I thought he brought it down like Bergkamp. But then I thought, no, it's Dan James. He's clearly not brought that down, has he? And then, yeah, as you said, then it came off Tarkowski's backside. But yeah, you know, that was just horrendous. I mean, that goal there is like you said, it was a nothing free kick down, just clipped into a channel, isn't it? And then all of a sudden he finds himself one-on-one. And it's even then it's a weak finish and it somehow managed to squirm past Pickford. And then I wanted to bring up that first goal as well. I mean, look, we all know Harry Wilson's got a nice left foot. Yeah, I mean, he plays, you know, fairly regularly for Wales. He has got a good delivery on him. He can have a dig. But that first goal as well is unforgivable, isn't it? I mean, Mikalenko, all day long, Wilson's playing off the right-hand side. He's all one foot. He's more one-footed than bloody Messi, isn't he, in terms of he hasn't got a right foot whatsoever. Yet he still allows him to cut on that left foot and have a shot which hits the post. I mean, all day long, just go on, go down the line. Go down the line, try and cross it in with your right foot. But yeah, going back to the third one, equally as bad. And then, you know, in a team that, and we've said this before, when you're in a team that's not scoring goals and you don't score the first goal and then you concede, obviously, a second goal after getting back into the game and then a third, it's almost as it's psychological completely then go, well, we've got to score three now to win the game. We can't even score two. How the hell are we going to score three now in 30 minutes? And the fact that Dyche didn't bring Sims on until the 74th minute, his reaction after going 3-1 down was to take Garner Gay off. Okay, he was booked to bring Tom Davies on. I mean, I'm baffled. I'm totally baffled by that. And then he waited another 6-7 minutes and then brought Sims on so you can have 15 minutes, mate. The Sims one for me is bonkers. You know what I mean? He played against United. He played against Liverpool. He came on against Chelsea and scored. And yet you don't. Mope, he's barely had a kick, by the way, in the last four or five games. He hasn't even come off the bench. And then somehow in his head, he's going to go, well, you can start, son. I mean, unbelievable. He'll probably look back at that now and go, yeah, we should have gone with Sims. And I kind of feel for Sims because, you know, you're playing against those teams I've just mentioned there where you're not going to have hardly any of the ball. And let's be honest, he won us a point on his own with a moment of magic against Chelsea. So he deserves the chance to have a start against, you know, Fulham in a winnable home game. He deserves the chance to, you know, give me a run out here, boss. I can maybe try and score potentially a couple of goals. And to give him 15 minutes, I mean, that's sacrilege for me, that absolute sacrilege, eating him 15 minutes. And, you know, it's a case of, you know, if he did have that chance, would he have slotted it? Possibly. He slotted it against Kepa, didn't he, against Chelsea. So I kind of feel for Sims there because he would have been thinking, Fulham at home, chance to get it, you know, get on the score sheet. And to give him 15 minutes, as I said, is absolute sacrilege.
It was, and you know, when he came on, the almost sort of the sarcastic cheers that went around the ground. One, because obviously Neil Mopé was going off. Which, by the way, I'm never a huge fan of. I've got to be honest. It's as much as we don't think he's at the level that we need, and he's certainly not. I'm never a huge fan of that. But obviously, then Ellison, like you say, gets sort of 15 minutes, and it was just the whole thing was just absolutely bizarre. And I just for the life of me can't work out how the manager. And it's not all, you know, of course, we can't sit there and say, oh, it's all on the manager, because it's not. A lot of factors play into it. That didn't help. The start 11 certainly didn't help. It, like you said, maybe I said to Pete, I felt there was a little bit of a buzz inside Goodison Park yesterday. And I think the first 20 minutes quickly drained that out of the ground. But, you know, looking ahead, we've got to hope now that the likes of Seamus Coleman's injury, Onana, who's apparently got a bit of a groin issue, and both of them, by the way, have been playing through injuries over the last few weeks as well. They've been getting managed. It's obviously, maybe it was a game too many for them. But, you know, Seamus missed a game for Ireland. Yet again, what I mean, I don't know why he's still going away with Ireland. But he gets called up and gets injured all the time when he goes with them. Everton, yet again, I've got to be putting the foot down with these kind of things, saying, listen, he's carrying. We don't want him going away. We've got to hope that he's back for Palace. We've got to hope Onana's back for Palace. We're missing Decore again against Crystal Palace, his final game. The mind you alluded to the fact that Calvert-Lewin may be involved in the squad. That's just no good, you know. And we can't just pin our hopes, by the way, on Dominic Calvert-Lewin coming back in. He scored one goal all season and has featured one Sunday under Sean Dyche for 60 minutes. Of course we can't, but it's the lift that it gives us. And I don't know about you, Jay, but if I would have seen Dominic Calvert-Lewin's name on the bench yesterday as a fan, that would have given me that little bit of a sort of spring in my step going. And even with that start 11, I would have thought, you know what, if he can get sort of 15, 20 minutes here to help us and help him ease his way back in, you know, that would have been a real positive to take from the day, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it was the first thing I looked for when I looked at the team sheet. I didn't expect him to start by any means, but I did expect to see him on the bench, having, like I say, been in training for 10 days. It does give you that bit of a boost. I think it's like I said earlier, it's now time just to throw caution to the wind. You've got to start putting players in that might not be 100% fit. Like I said, that game yesterday is a winnable game. Game's coming up, Crystal Palace. I think obviously under Roy Hodgson, they've had a bit of a resurgence, haven't they? So, you know, I think we just got to go and look at every game. I think Dyche is actually the man to do it. I think he will probably tell them a few home truths after that one. I think even, you know, you can say is an unacceptable performance. And I think hopefully as professional athletes, they'll all be either sat there today or whatever, whenever they go into training and reflect on that game and go, you know what, that was, that wasn't good enough. It wasn't a performance that we wanted to put in or needed to put in. And hopefully they can look at this Palace game coming up and say, right, we need to put that right, because, you know, us as fans expect 110% every time they go out on the field. And yesterday we just wasn't given that.
Yeah, you're totally right. And I think it is for the players to take a long, hard look at themselves in the mirror and, you know, decide in their own mind whether that was that level and that standard was good enough. Not only, by the way, for Everton Football Club, but for them as professionals and for a side that are apparently fighting for their lives. There was no fight in them whatsoever. And that is the biggest concern for me. You know, we've seen it under Sean Dyche where we've looked like we've got the half of the battle and the fight and what have you. And yesterday was the polar opposite of recent performances, the likes of the Spurs game, even the likes of Leeds, Forest away at times. I think, you know, we were miles away from that. But like you say, you know, Crystal Palace next up, and they've won a lot. The you know, Roy Hodgson's come in, they've won three games on the spin, they pulled themselves away, they've got no relegation concerns anymore, in my opinion. And we're going to discuss that after this short break. Welcome back to the second part of today's Unholy Trinity podcast. As we look ahead to what is, you know, what we thought was going to be a bit of a relegation six-pointer going back a few weeks ago. But now, under Roy Hodgson, like we said before the break, Crystal Palace have turned a serious corner, won three games on the spin. You know, in the middle of those games, a fantastic 5-1 win away from home at Leeds United, beat Southampton 2-0 away yesterday. And a lot of people laughed when they brought Roy Hodgson back into the club out of retirement again. And what he's done for them in three games has been nothing short of spectacular. I mean, Palace are a side that you always think have got that talent. They've got a lot of players who are quick, powerful, skillful. You know, so a little bit surprised maybe to have seen Crystal Palace in the mix. And I think a lot of us thought that they were going to get themselves dragged in after being mid-table security. Vieira had a really poor end to his time at Palace. And we thought they're gonna drop like a stone, but 9 points from nine has seen them, as I say, their relegation fears be alleviated, and it now becomes a game against a real informed side at what is always a lively Selhurst Park. And Pete, how do we even begin to look forward to that while still in the doldrums from Goodison Park performance yesterday?
Well, we need a lift, don't we? And I think that the hope is that at least one of the players who weren't available for the Fulham team are able to come back in. You know, hopefully Onana. Hopefully Calvert-Lewin can at least make the bench. And you think, you know, would that give us enough, you know, both psychologically, but, you know, also pragmatically and tactically to go in and be a different outfit? Because we certainly don't want to see that 4-4-2 again. We certainly can't have a performance like we had against Fulham, because for me, every single team in the Premier League beat us if we played the way that we did against Fulham, because it was just an absolute car crash. It was a horror show. So it needs to be different. It needs to go back to packing the midfield, because we're not good enough to have a two in there. Regardless of who the two are, you know, we need a 4-5-1 or, you know, 4-3-3 out. However you break it down, we need a midfield three. So hopefully Onana can come back in and give us that. Or, you know, if we've got the same three in terms of Iwobi, Garner and Garner Gay. And I thought James Garner showed flashes of his quality actually against Fulham. It's clear that there's a decent footballer there. But if it is those three, they need to start in the middle together. Because I think the irony is, Iwobi on the last part has shown that he can play that box-to-box role. If you're not going to get what you get from Onana and Doucouré in terms of challenging centre-halves and making the ball stick. But he can carry it, and he can press, and he can break up play. So it seems baffling to me that, you know, Dyche maybe hasn't put more faith in him so far, in maybe kind of playing him in that box to box midfield role. So I hope if Onana's not available, that we at least set up in the right way to get something from the game. And for me, that includes Ellis Sims starting. You know, no disrespect to Neil Mope, but he should not be starting another game for Everton Football Club. He should be on the bench. And if we get desperate and we need to roll the dice, that should be Neil Mope's role. And in a weird way, I think that probably get the best out of him, because I think it'd take pressure off him, because it must filter through. You know, he knows what kind of player he is. He'll be able to feel it from the crowd when he's playing. You can't start him. It's no way to win a game. And Dyche has to learn that lesson, and hopefully he's learnt it now. So, yeah, I think we need some key personnel back. But if we don't, we've got to set up in the right way. Otherwise, we're writing our own death sentence, aren't we?
Is it a case, Lee, do you think of maybe setting up now? I mean, Jake mentioned about, obviously, you know, going for it and, you know, sort of put your foot down and have a real go. Is it a case of doing that? Or is it a case of setting up to just go, you know what, we've just got to be difficult to beat. We've just got to fight for every ball. we've got to get back to what we've done so well in the early part of Sean Dyche's tenure. Is it a case of just is trying to do that, especially given the fact that maybe, you know, when we go to Crystal Palace, we could be without the same players again. Decore definitely is obviously out with his last game of his suspension. There's no guarantee that Dom's going to be in, you know, in the squad again. We just don't know. What would you rather see us do?
Well, we've got no choice. We've got 7 games left till the end of the season. We're on 27 points. You know, that would have taken us to the 30 barrier, which is obviously a bit of a milestone, and that again in itself brings a bit of confidence. Now, you know, the game's running out thick and fast, and like Jake said before, I mean the time to go for it was yesterday, but obviously, clearly, you know, Dyche's first thought is always caution, and that's the type of manager he is. That's what you're always going to get. And we Palace away is always a tricky game. Now, before they got rid of Vieira, they hadn't won a game since the restart. So obviously, you know, timing sometimes in sport is everything. If you play a team then, if we'd have played them a few weeks ago, then, you know, arguably you'd say you go into that game really fancying us. Now, all of a sudden, you know, they're scoring goals for fun under Roy Hodgson, who, let's be honest, is also known as a pragmatic manager, but they've scored 7 in the last 2 games. And they've pulled themselves away from it. And I've been saying this the last few weeks, if we can just somehow get on a run, you know, whether it's, you know, 2 wins in a row, 3 wins in a row, like Palace have done, like Bournemouth have done, 3 wins in 4, that suddenly just instantly lifts you out of the mess, you know, and takes the pressure off the team completely. We've not been able to do that. Like I said, it's 1 win in 8. So, you know, Palace, our record there isn't great either. We have had a few wins there, but it's a tough game to go for any side. It's going to be even more difficult now the fact that they're resurgent, you know, I've always liked Eze and I've always liked Elise, 2 really young, talented players, and they're starting to come to the fore now. You know, Eze got 2 yesterday. Elise was brilliant the other day against Leeds. And this is going to be a really, really tough game. You know, this was also a Palace team that was struggling to score themselves. You know, they were having forward issues. You know what I mean? There was a lot of stick going there with the likes of Mateta and people like that. But, you know, they found a way. You know, they found a way to suddenly that they looked like one of the most formed teams in the league. So yeah, it's going to be a case of going there, and obviously we can't be gung-ho because they've got the quality to pick us off. I don't think Zahar is back. He's had what looks like a fairly significant muscle injury, which may keep him out for a few more weeks. That's a bonus because obviously he's one of their best players. Having said that, they've not had Zahar the last 2 games, and look what they've done. So, you know, It's one of those. We've got to go in there, like Pete said, pack the midfield, just fight for every ball, and then hopefully we can nick the first goal. In the way Everton are right now, scoring the first goal is everything. It's absolutely everything, because it's the effect that has on the players. Like I said before, of knowing if we don't score first, how the hell are we going to score 2? Because we need to win. Draws aren't good enough now, by the way. Well, yeah, look, getting a point here and there. The point against Spurs looks pretty poor now, the way Spurs played yesterday against Bournemouth, by the way. But, you know, we've got to find wins. You know, we're going to need to get to, I think, at least maybe 37 points, 36, 37 points. So we've got to try and get, you know, ideally maybe 3 wins there in the next 7 games. And when I look at that fixture list, lads, I find it really difficult to see that. I really do.
I think that's what many people have been saying, obviously, after yesterday's game. That was potentially our most winnable game on paper. And when you come away with no points, let alone 1 or 3, it's a huge uphill task. And especially, you know, we've still got to go away to Leicester, of course. Wolves, as I say, pulled themselves away. We've got to go there as well. Newcastle are coming to Goodison Park. Bournemouth sort of turning the corner and pulling themselves away could do us a favour. Because last game of the season, if they've got nothing to play for, that may help us. But Jake, do you see any positives going into the Palace game? Do you think Everton can get a result from anywhere?
Yeah, I mean, you've always got to look for the positives. Where they are, I'm not quite sure at the minute. But I think with Crystal Palace being on such good form at the minute, I think, you know, we are going to have to soak up a bit of pressure. I think they're a young sort of exciting team that are going to bring pace and come at you from all angles. So I think there are going to be times where we're definitely going to have to sit in and soak up a bit of pressure. But I think that, for me, that makes the Ellis Sim selection more important in the fact that, you know, he's probably going to have to be up there on his own for a bit. We need somebody with a bit of power, a bit of strength, but it's something to be able to hold the ball up and wait for your Greys and McNeil to sort of get up with him. So I think, I think that for me, that's the only way I see us winning. I think we're probably going to have to play on the break a little bit. I do actually think suits us a little bit when we do have Graham McNeil. Sort of, I think you mentioned earlier about Pickford. I was watched the game yesterday, and he was getting so frustrated that nobody was making those runs down the wing, and that was his frustration. The fact that he was getting the ball, he was looking up, and like you say, everything was down the middle. He wants to get the ball out to the wings. I think if we set up like that, get Sims through the middle, get McNeil and Gray down the wings, and hopefully get a few crosses into the box or whatever and try and nick a goal and then cling on for dear life. I think that's our way to 3 points at Palace.
I think the Corey loss is way more than we thought, isn't it? It really is. I mean, Harry Kane, we've said this the other week, but I mean, you know, absolutely embarrassing the way he got the Corey sent off there, by the way. Obviously, it was a red card. We know it was. But that's proved so much more than we thought, hasn't it? It really has.
Well, nobody would have thought, you know, bear in mind, the Corey wasn't playing on the Frank Lampard. Nobody would have thought that he would have such an impact coming back in and be such a miss, because he massively so. And I say it's just from a setting the tone in terms of being almost that first line of a press. And the energy that he puts on display for everyone to see, and that pulls some players through to his level sometimes as well. You know, if you've got someone leading in that way, and you know, showing so much energy and putting the press on at the right time and being effective doing it, then other players then look at that and think, yeah, you know, he's leading by example. I'll follow suit. Whereas we lacked all of that yesterday, more so than in the United game, and as I say, with no leadership as well. Say Tarkowski was poor, no Seamus Coleman, obviously no physical presence in Onana. It was a big miss. And yet the Corey has done particularly well since Sean Dyche has come in, and you know, hopefully he comes back refreshed against Newcastle and he gives us a little bit of a lift. But hopefully that's not too late for us to pick up points. But let's finish off. No, I know, Jake, you've got training this morning. Hopefully you can take out your frustrations on some of the batsmen in the nets and throw a few 90 mile an hour balls down at them. But give us your prediction for Palace on Saturday.
I can't see us scoring two goals. So I'm gonna go for a one. I'll go for 1-0. Try and nick one on the break. I'm gonna be very optimistic.
Very optimistic indeed. Yeah, we'd all take a 1-0 win, that's for sure. Pete.
Yeah, I'm going to go for an optimistic 1-0 as well. Tarkowski header, set piece.
Lee, hat-trick of 1-0s?
I'm actually going to go hat-trick of 1-0s, mate. Despite us being absolutely massively pessimistic, which is very much unlike us on this podcast. But I'm going to say Ellis Sims is going to prove everyone wrong. He's going to have a one-on-one. He's not going to dink it. He's going to slot it in the bottom corner.
I'm going to say 1-1 and ruin the round of predictions. I just can't see us going to Palace and getting a winner. I really can't. And I think 1-1 is probably being optimistic at this moment in time. Maybe if it recorded, you know, on Thursday or Friday, I might feel a little bit better. But it's a tricky game. It's a tricky game. And we're all going to be watching, obviously, the games today and looking to see how they impact ourselves. And, you know, it's a horrible way to live at this moment in time. It really is. But let's hope we have a decent week. Let's hope the players reflect and the manager and realise that was spectacularly wrong against Fulham yesterday. And we see a much improved Everton performance next week at Crystal Palace. But Jake, we know you've got to get off. We appreciate you spending a bit of time on a Sunday morning discussing that debacle at Park yesterday.
Cheers, boys. Really appreciate it. Have a good one.
Good luck for the season, mate.
Cheers, mate. See you soon.
And we'll be back ourselves next week to look back on that Crystal Palace game. Of course, massive game. We need 3 points, that is for sure. So we'll be back next weekend to look back at that and look ahead to the visit of Newcastle United and a certain Anthony Gordon to go to St Park. So we will catch you then.
The Unholy Trinity Podcast. Three blues, three opinions, one Everton podcast.
Sports Social Podcast Network.